The Buddy Ryan Retrospective is brought to you by the Casino at Delaware Park and Foreman Mills.
Buddy Ryan's the type of head coach that he exhibited a lot of confidence in me. I would run through a brick wall for Buddy Ryan right now.
He was just one of those guys. He'll sit down and laugh with you. He was just real. As a coach, you don't run into coaches like that all the time. Some people are so strict and so straightforward, you know, that they take the fun out of the game.
There was never in my entire life talking about Buddy Ryan who polarized the city more. People that liked him loved him blindly.
Philadelphia, the way they treated our family and my dad, it was awesome, man. I mean, I'll never forget, anytime my dad would come back, man, you have no idea, the smile on his face and all that type of stuff. He loved Philadelphia. I think he identified big time with the city. The city, you know, appreciated him.
There were no secrets in a Buddy Ryan world. When a player ticked him off, he ripped him out right in front of you.
You always knew where you stood with him as a player, and he was very open about that.
Tonight we look back at the life and times of James David Buddy Ryan. Buddy Ryan was born in 1934 in a small community outside Frederick, Oklahoma. He was a four-year offensive lineman at the university now known as Oklahoma State. An Army sergeant in the Korean War, Buddy's first paying job in football in 1957 was as an assistant coach at Gainesville High School in Gainesville, Texas. By 1959, he was promoted to head coach, which was the only head coaching job Buddy held until 1986 when Norman Braman hired him as the Eagles head coach. Hall of Fame football writer Ray Didinger says it was a long time coming for Buddy Ryan.
Probably a little bit of his personality. If people did interview him or did talk to him, that he came off as a guy that was going to be pretty strong-willed, maybe a little hard-headed, might not be the easiest guy to get along with. But I know that it really bothered him that it took so long for him to get that opportunity. And it's one of the reasons why he had certain hard feelings and certain feuds with other coaches. He felt like he paid his dues. He felt like he came up the hard way. If he saw other coaches, other head coaches, that he thought had head coaching jobs handed to them, he always resented that. It's one of the reasons why he had a feud with Jimmy Johnson. He felt like he should have had this opportunity long before he did, and it was one of the things that, in a lot of ways, kind of defined his personality.
Buddy spent most of the 1960s as an assistant coach on the college level. In 1968, he was hired by Weeb Eubank to be the Jets' defensive line coach. On January 12, 1969, the Jets pulled off what many still consider to be the greatest upset in Super Bowl and sports history, beating the heavily favored Baltimore Colts, with Buddy's D-line being instrumental in holding the Colts to just 7 points. The win by the Jets legitimized the AFL and the merger with the NFL, with the popular thinking that the NFL was a much superior league. By 1976, Buddy had moved on to the Minnesota Vikings, where he was defensive line coach under the legendary Bud Grant. The front four was nicknamed the Purple People Eaters, and the 1976 Vikings would go all the way to the Super Bowl, where they lost to John Madden's Oakland Raiders. In 1978, Buddy was hired to be the Chicago Bears' defensive coordinator. It was there he installed his infamous 46 defense. Buddy survived the head coach's firing after his defensive players lobbied Bears president George Halas to keep him under new head coach Mike Ditka. Buddy and Ditka did not get along, but the Bears' defense excelled and dominated under Buddy's direction. In 1985, the Bears' defense was maybe the best the NFL had ever seen, dominating every statistical category, with the Bears going 15-1 and then crushing the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Buddy's players carried him off the field as if he were the head coach. In the locker room after the game, Ray Didinger noticed that Buddy Ryan was off in a corner talking with Eagles owner Norman Braman, which confirmed to him that Buddy was about to become the Eagles' new head coach.
I walked into the interview room where they were bringing the Chicago coaches and players, and there's Ditka, and there's Jim McMahon, and there's the fridge and all that stuff. But I looked over to the side, and there in a little huddle, just the two of them, are Norman Braman and Buddy Ryan. And I was only about 10 feet away. As they parted, I heard Braman say, "Well, we'll be in touch with you." Buddy gave him a thumbs-up sign. That was when I knew he was going to be the coach. So I went around that interview room, forget about the Super Bowl. I mean, that to me was incidental. At that point, all I'm going to do is I'm going to talk to the Bears defensive players about Buddy Ryan. What came out of it was, in talking to Singletary and Dan Hampton and Otis Wilson and all those guys, was how much they really loved this guy. And when they talked about the meeting the night before the game, when Buddy talked to the defense, when he had his players in a room, he didn't exactly tell them what was going to happen, but the message was clearly there that this was it, that he was going to be leaving. And this was his last game. His final words to the guys were, "Regardless of what happens tomorrow, I want you to know you'll always be my heroes." You know, I had Hampton and Singletary both tell me that story and both break down crying. I just thought, what an extraordinary thing to see two guys that just won a Super Bowl and yet crying in the locker room because they were losing their coach. He has that kind of emotional connection to these guys and they to him was a very extraordinary thing. And that's something that I'll always remember.
2 days later, on January 28, 1986, Buddy Ryan was named Eagle head coach. It may not have been the best of starts, though. The Eagles went 5-10-1 in his first season, worse than the 7-9 record the Eagles posted in 1985. But he did beat the Cowboys late in the season, and he created a buzz with the Birds that had been absent for several seasons. Buddy and Philadelphia seemed to be a perfect match. And while the media was skeptical about Buddy, they found him to be most entertaining and a veritable quote machine.
In the years that I covered the Eagles that he was the coach, it was the least work I ever had to do. He would talk to us before we got a chance to see the players. And invariably, almost without exception, he would trash somebody. He would say something extreme that we would then get quotes from the locker room for and have our story. Almost every day.
Buddy had a whole different style. I didn't really like it, but I got to say that in addition to it really working with the fans here, I got to admit it amused me. even when Buddy and I were quarreling and bickering, in the course of any given interview, he would always do at least one or two things that would make me laugh.
Howard Eskin, who began his long run at WIP during the Buddy Ryan era, probably had the most adversarial relationship with Buddy.
He used to call me names on the radio. For whatever reason, he called me a gerbil. I don't know where that came from. You know, Burger King didn't exist at that time in the way we know it. So otherwise, he would have probably done that. We went at each other. We both understood it. I didn't care because he was on another radio station doing a show. He would find his time to do it there. He was aware of what was going on, and he would criticize me or rip me or whatever you want to call it. But he never seemed to be offended like some people are offended.
At the time, there were only a few sports talk radio shows in Philadelphia, mainly Howard here on WIP, and Steve Fredericks on 1210 AM, currently our sister station, but at the time, our competition down the dial. Steve Fredericks did a weekly radio show with Buddy Ryan that was not your typical coach's show.
I used to listen to it all the time because you never knew what he was going to say. You know, you thought your day's work was done when you wrote your story, but it wasn't really done until you heard his show because there was a chance that he could rewrite your story for you in the 1 hour that he was on the air. It's probably the best coach's show that I've ever been around because it was just so honest and it was just so Buddy. And he understood that there was an entertainment factor here. Buddy's idea was, you know, I'm going to make this, if this is radio and it's supposed to be about entertainment, I'm going to try and make it entertaining. Week after week, win or lose, he pretty much did that. That coach's show was the best of its kind, and partly it was because of Buddy's personality and what Buddy brought to it. But the other part of it was Steve was not your typical coach show host. I mean, Steve wasn't a guy that just sat there and tossed softballs. I mean, if there was a tough question to ask, Steve would ask it. You had a host that was fearless, and you had a coach that was absolutely fearless, and in many cases, tactless. And so it made for pretty good listening.
Longtime Trenton Times beat writer Mark Eckel and Angelo Cataldi in his pre-WIP days as an award-winning Inquirer Eagles beat writer said that the Buddy Ryan radio show was a must-listen, lest you miss out on some breaking news.
You had to listen.
It was like an extra assignment. And you had to sit down and listen on the radio to see if there was more stories he was going to give you.
With breaking news sometimes. A caller calls once and is complaining about some player on the team. And Buddy says, well, you won't have to worry about him too much longer. I just got rid of him. And we didn't know that.
He cut a guy at his radio show.
Right. And then we would ask the next day, Buddy, you just said on the radio show that you cut whoever the guy was. Why didn't you tell us? You guys didn't ask.
In Buddy's second season with the Eagles, they began to show some promise that better things were to come. Ironically, things began to turn around because of a labor dispute, which led to a player's strike. The NFL decided to ignore the strike and play games with replacement players. Ray Didinger said that Buddy wanted nothing to do with his replacement players, which endeared him to his real players.
Buddy's approach during the strike was when the veteran players walked out, but the owners opened the gates to replacement players. He told his veteran players, there are going to be veteran players that are going to cross the picket line, and they're going to play in these games. They might win a game here or there, but it's going to cause problems down the line. And I don't want to deal with that. I want you guys to stay together. I don't want this strike to ruin it. So you stay out. He made no secret of his disdain for the whole idea of replacement football. He openly spoke about it. whereas a lot of other coaches kind of towed the party line. Buddy made no secret of the fact that he thought this was a disgrace, that the league was doing this, and he wasn't going to coach him, and he didn't coach him. It was just his way of showing Norman Brayman and the other owners that you can play these games and you can call this pro football, but I'm not a part of it. His players, his veteran players, his real players, they were already really devoted to him, but I think this just deepened it in that Buddy, clearly in the eyes of management, he stood with his players. The players who already loved Buddy loved him even more.
The Eagles would finish that season 7-8, though Buddy always said they were 7-5 because he refused to acknowledge and count the three strike games that were played that season with replacement players. One of the storylines of the strike games was a game in Dallas against the Cowboys. A number of Cowboys had crossed the picket line by the time they played the Eagles. Buddy felt that Cowboy coach Tom Landry had run up the score with the regulars against the Eagle replacement players. Not one Eagle had crossed the picket line. When the Cowboys came into the Vet late that season, Buddy decided it was time for revenge with all his regulars back. The Eagles led comfortably very late in the game, but Buddy decided it was time to teach Tom Landry and the Cowboys a lesson.
Randall's about to kneel down. The Eagles have the game won. He stands back up and throws a touchdown pass.
2 weeks prior to that, it's when he had played everybody he had on that strike game. Remember, I had all those Hayes off the street, and he had all his good people, and he played them against me and beat the hell out of me. And I told him right after the game on national television, you come to Philadelphia, we're going to kick your ass.
That was Buddy Ryan with Angelo Cataldi on The Angelo Show on Comcast Sportsnet around 12 years ago. Needless to say, Buddy's legend grew with that game in 1987. At the time, it appeared he had an intense dislike for all that Tom Landry and the Cowboys represented, with his and their smug, holier-than-thou attitude. But it would turn out that Buddy would despise Landry's successor a lot more than Landry. That story is still to come. You're listening to the Buddy Ryan Retrospective, brought to you by the Casino at Delaware Park and Foreman Mills on 94WIP. Hopes were high for the 1988 Eagles going into the season. The young defense, led by Reggie White, Jerome Brown, Clyde Simmons, and rookie cornerback Eric Allen, was coming together.
There were so many great players there, great men. To make up for me not being drafted in the first round, what Buddy Ryan said and did, you were the starting cornerback of the Philadelphia Eagles at 21 years old. This was in April or May minicamp. So I'm thinking to myself, what the heck is going on? I go from, you know, Arizona State and join the draft and, you know, I'm the starting cornerback for the Philadelphia Eagles right now. You know, pencil my name right at the bottom next to, you know, Andre Waters and Wes Hopkins and all those guys.
After blowing out Tampa in the season opener, the Eagles dropped their next three games, and people were beginning to wonder how long the Buddy Ryan era would last. Buddy got the Eagles back on track, though, closing the season by winning six of their last seven, including a 23-7 win in Dallas in what turned out to be Tom Landry's last game as Cowboys head coach. The 10-6 Eagles were back in the playoffs, winners of the NFC East with a first-round bye. As fate would have it, their second-round playoff game was at Soldier Field, home of Buddy's former employer, the Chicago Bears. Ray Didinger sets the scene.
This was a young Eagles team that was clearly on the rise, was definitely fearless, and in a lot of ways reflected Buddy's personality, that they weren't afraid or intimidated by anybody. They were going to come into Chicago, and they felt like they were going to knock off the big bad Bears. Buddy was not afraid of just coming right out and saying that. So he did all week. All the people in Chicago, that was what they wrote about all week, was, you know, Buddy's coming back, and he's bringing this team with him, and nobody better take this lightly. And Buddy said the same thing. The feeling that you had around that team that week, they really felt like they were going to win. I mean, there weren't many people around the country that gave the Eagles much of a chance in that game. But the players felt like they were going to go in there and win the game, and it was partly because Buddy convinced them they could.
It was December 1st, 1988, and the game would start in the sun and end in the fog.
A blinding fog descended on Soldier Field in the middle of the game, obscuring the view with a thick, hazy cloud.
Any possibility of a view from the press box, our normal game coverage, is impossible.
Sometimes I couldn't see the other side of the field, but they had the same problems on their side.
The Eagles would lose the infamous Fog Bowl 20-12. The following season, expectations were even higher. The NFC East was loaded, but very top-heavy, with the Giants and Skins fielding powerful teams along with the Eagles. The Cards weren't particularly good, but the Cowboys were particularly bad under first-year coach Jimmy Johnson, who had come from the University of Miami and was a former college teammate of new Cowboy owner Jerry Jones. On November 23rd, the Eagles and Cowboys were in the national spotlight, playing a Thanksgiving Day game at Texas Stadium. The playoff-bound Eagles destroyed the Cowboys 27-0, but the game was most known for what happened during the kickoff at the start of the second half. Eagle rookie linebacker Jesse Small knocked kicker Luis Endejas silly. After the game, Jimmy Johnson alleged that Buddy Ryan had set a bounding on both Zendejas, who the Eagles had released a few weeks previous, and quarterback Troy Aikman.
We were told last night by a coach, and it was confirmed by two different players. There's a $200 bounty on Luis Zendejas, a $500 bounty on Troy Aikman. That takes away from the integrity of the game. And I would have said something to Buddy, but he wouldn't stand on the field long enough. He put his big fat rear end into the dressing room.
Buddy would deny that there was any bounty on his TV show a few days later.
Johnson, their coach, is making all kind of excuses for not preparing his team well to play us. I don't have any respect for him because he got my college on probation at Oklahoma State, and now he's at the Cowboys, and he doesn't have the guts to take credit for a loss. If his friend hadn't owned the club, he wouldn't be back next year, I'm sure, as a coach. And I'm sure those veteran players he has on that team don't believe all that high school Charlie stuff he's spreading.
Years later, appearing on Angelo Cataldi's TV show on Comcast Sportsnet, Buddy stuck to his original story that this was a case of Jimmy Johnson covering up for his shortcomings.
The supposed bounty on the kicker, Luis Zendejas.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that? We can all say it now. Oh. What really happened?
Jimmy Johnson down there, he didn't prepare his team very well. They got their ass kicked real bad. Riders are fixing to run him out of town, so he just jumps on something. Well, the bounty bowl on the Zendejas. So 2 weeks later, he had a bounty on Zendejas.
Did you not like the Cowboys because they were the Cowboys, or did you not specifically not like Jimmy Johnson?
Oh, I didn't like Jimmy Johnson, but I liked Landry. He's a nice guy.
This is the Buddy Ryan Retrospective brought to you by the Casino at Delaware Park and Foreman Mills on 94WIP. The 1990 Eagles struggled out of the gate under new offensive coordinator Rich Kotite. Then Buddy stepped in and more or less told Kotite to let Randall be Randall. The Eagles would go on to win 10 games and make the playoffs for the third straight year. The Randall would have a Pro Bowl and MVP-like season, 30 touchdown passes, only 13 interceptions, and 942 yards rushing. Buddy inexplicably benched him for a series during their wild card playoff loss to the Skins at the Vet. Ray Didinger says it was not why Buddy was fired a few days later by Norman Brayman, but it certainly didn't help.
I still don't understand what he was thinking at that moment when he lifts Cunningham from the game, puts Jim McMahon in for one series, and then takes McMahon out and puts Randall back in. I mean, it was clearly a panic move. That just gave Norman Brayman the lever to do what he wanted to do, which was fire Buddy. Randall was clearly upset by it, and when the game was over in the press conference, used the terms that I was insulted by what happened. That just gave Brayman kind of the excuse. I think he would have fired Buddy anyway. Brayman had pretty much had it with Buddy at that point. I think the only thing that would have saved Buddy would have been if they had actually gotten to the Super Bowl that year. I really didn't have much doubt when I left the building that day that that was the last game Buddy Ryan was going to coach in Philadelphia.
After five seasons, one division title, three playoff appearances, but no playoff wins, the Buddy Ryan era was over in Philadelphia. After spending several years at a small horse farm in Kentucky, Buddy Ryan returned to the NFL as defensive coordinator with the Houston Oilers in 1993. The Oilers had just fired the defensive coordinator, Jim Eddy, after they'd blown a 32-point lead in the playoff game against the Bills. The 1993 Oilers would go 12-4, had the stingiest defense in the AFC, but get upset by Joe Montana and the Kansas City Chiefs in the second round of the playoffs. However, Buddy Ryan would parlay his work on the Oilers' defense into his second NFL head coaching job. Bill Bidwell made him the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. On November 6, 1994, Buddy and the Cards came into the Vet. Seth Joyner and Clyde Simmons had followed Buddy to Phoenix. In the weeks leading up to the game, there had been thoughts that Cards fans, i.e. Buddy Ryan fans, could outnumber Eagle fans that day at the Vet, especially since Eagle fans were not that thrilled with Buddy's replacement, Rich Kotite.
There were a lot of people that came to the game rooting for Buddy. There were real Buddy loyalists right to the very end. He really did resonate with these fans.
But the Eagles were on a serious roll going into the game with a 6-2 record. Losses only to the Giants and Cowboys. The Buddy Bowl, though, would turn out to be anticlimactic. The Eagles would win 17-7 to improve to 7-2. But one of Buddy's favorite players with the Eagles, Byron Evans, would break his leg, and the Eagles would not win another game the rest of the season. Buddy's Cards would finish at 8-8. The backstory of Buddy's return to the city in 1994 is provided by Howard Eskin. He says he lost a bet to a caller to his radio show and had to perform an unenviable task as a result before the game.
The caller got tired of me criticizing Buddy. He made a bet with me, and I forget what the bet was, but he said he would donate $1,000 for charity if I would wash Buddy Ryan's feet. And I remember going over to the hotel, We got a big area off the lobby near the ballroom. We set up a chair. We had the tub. We had the toe soap. I had the brush. And I cleaned his feet.
In 1995, the Cards fell to 4-12, and Buddy was fired. He would never coach again. You're listening to the Buddy Ryan Retrospective, brought to you by the Casino at Delaware Park and Foreman Mills. In 1997, Buddy, who was still very popular here, was back in the area for a public appearance. Dick Girardi, who's covered college basketball and college football for the Daily News for over 30 years, in addition to his first love, horse racing, explains.
They had a day for him at Garden State Park, just sitting around talking horses, football, and just a regular guy. I remember this being a fun day, and he was a little bit out of the limelight, but you could tell when he walked around the track. Everybody obviously recognized him, and everybody wanted to talk to him. Several racehorses, certainly not high-caliber horses, but several through the years. I don't think he was trying to make any money with a race operation. I think it was more just like he liked being around them. Fired for Winning was the name of the horse. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. And he was just laughing about it, talking about it. That's who I had to name the horse when he retired for a little while back to his farm in Kentucky.
In the last 15 years, Buddy was a guest on WIP on occasion. The most memorable, his in-person appearance on the WIP Morning Show in 2004. Buddy Ryan died on Tuesday morning. He was 85. His legacy lives on through his twin sons, Rex, the Bills head coach, and Rob, a longtime defensive coordinator with a host of NFL teams, and his former players with the Eagles, Bears, and Cards, one of whom coached the NFC champs this past season, Ron Rivera. Our last words on Buddy Ryan will come from some of the men who played for him, Gary Cobb, Randall Cunningham, Eric Allen, Seth Joyner, and Mike Quick, and from some media members who covered him.
Buddy had a really warm heart. I mean, he cared about the guys that battled for him, and once you proved to him that you would go out and go to battle for him, you were always one of his guys, and he always greeted you with a lot of warmth.
He would tell the defense, go out there and get them the ball, get the offense the ball, and they would go get turnovers, so that gave us more opportunities to score.
The one thing he imprinted on me early on is, this is a job. You have to come in, respect your teammates or in the workplace. Come in early, you stay late, and if you want to be the best at your job, you got to put in the effort.
I'm forever indebted to him because as a young kid, I had a dream to play in the NFL. While there were, 30 teams at that time when I came in the league, 30 GMs and 30 head coaches and 30 scouting departments, 29 of them didn't believe that Seth Joyner could be an NFL football player.
Muhammad Ali could go out and brag about a fight and do it, knock people out, impose his will on people. Well, Buddy Ryan came into Philadelphia and he gave us some of that same bravado and the way that he talked about what his team was going to do and what he could do defensively. And we bought in, and the city bought in to Buddy Ryan.
Eagles were not good the first year he was here. And he came in, I can remember the first day the media was covering him. And he said to us, and no coach has ever said this to me anywhere else in my life, if we lose a game, and I don't expect to, he believed they win every game, and the player who screwed up doesn't directly say to you as a reporter that he screwed up, I want you to let me know.
He would be very critical of the owner. And Stan Walters and I used to look at each other. He'd say things to us. And you know the famous one where players were out and the media got around him at training camp and he didn't have half his team there. And he said, we'd be okay if the guy from France would ever get back.
I don't want to be sad. I just want to celebrate the life of James David Buddy Ryan.
The Buddy Ryan Retrospective has been brought to you by the Casino at Delaware Park and Foreman Mills. The associate producer is Wes Lynn, co-executive producer Brian Haddad. I'm Rob Cherry. Thank you for listening to 94 WIP.